Okay, our speaker for tonight is Adam L. from San Diego. Let's rod dog this thing, man.
Hey everyone, Adam Alcoholic.
Hi, Adam.
Very happy to be here. John, thanks for asking me to lead. Just to set expectations, pretty new to this, being a speaker, so take it easy on me. My sobriety date is September 8th, 2020. I got sober during the pandemic on Zoom, and it still works, just in case anyone's wondering. And my home group is Mount Soledad Men's every Saturday. Congrats to the newcomers who are here. You guys are the reason we put on these meetings, is to help you guys get sober. And John, thanks for asking me to lead. First met John, I got time to kill, so we can. I was outside, I was going to Mount Soledad Men's for the first time. I was nervous as all hell, and we were going to surf before, and this guy comes up with a cast on his neck out of a truck with the Airborne on the back and tattoos, and I was scared shitless. And I met him. He's like, yeah, my name's John, broke my neck surfing. And I was like, okay, cool. Next week goes by, I'm in the water surfing, and I see him, no neck brace, surfing on a wave in front of me. And I just remember going, that guy's an absolute maniac. Like, he is insane. But I think I caught him at the tail end of his neck break, so he was healed by then. But yeah, just to kind of tell you guys a little bit about my program, it's very, very simple. Meat and potatoes AA. I work the steps. I have a sponsor. I sponsor other men. And I have a relationship with a higher power that I'm working on every day. Before I talk about how great sobriety is, I'll just state that I do not have a perfect program in AA. I probably need to go to more meetings, probably need to meditate more. I just got a text from my sponsor this morning saying that I need to call him more, to which I got like a massive resentment towards him for. Hey, Doug, I love you. But the one thing that I do perfectly, and this is the only thing, is I don't drink ever. That's my one thing that I've done perfectly over the last 5.5 years. Nothing else I've done perfectly. A lot of trial, a lot of error, a lot of putting myself through more pain than I needed to because I didn't pray, I didn't meditate, I didn't call anyone. But I did not drink. But I got close, and I'll tell you guys a little bit about that later on. And so because of those things that I mentioned, some things have come true for me, and those are what's outlined in the big book as the promises, right? And just for the newcomers, I'll read them out quickly to you, because this is what you get when you work the program. It's not getting back your ex-partner or a job or a car, although you do get some of those things back. And then sometimes you regret getting some of those things back. But the things that you get are this. First is that we're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change, and fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us that we could not do for ourselves. So if you work the program at just the most basic level, you just try, that's what you get. And the second thing you'll get after the 11 things that you get, the second thing, is sobriety goes from feeling like a sentence to a gift. You know, I think when we first all get into AA, you feel like you're sentenced here. You know, I'm never going to have fun. Some people are legitimately sentenced here. but we are also spiritually sentenced here. And somewhere along the way, it just changes. And it stops feeling like a sentence, and it feels just like the way that you live your life. And at times, it feels really, really awesome, right? Doesn't mean you're always happy in sobriety, but it does end up always feeling like a gift that you have that you don't want to let go of. So to the newcomer, if you want any of those things in the promises, then you're in the right place, and it's pretty easy to get those. You're just going to have to do a little work to get it. So I'll go back to the beginning and tell you a little bit about what it was like. So I grew up in San Francisco to my lovely, lovely mom right there. Applause, please. No, sure. My dad was an alcoholic. My sister is an alcoholic. They are both in the program today. So alcoholism was the family business, and business was good, you know? And I don't want to paint a picture that I had like a horrible childhood. I mean, I feel like we all have things that we now classify as childhood trauma, but by and large, like, I had a roof over my head, had a mom who loved me, put me in anything that I wanted to do, any kind of sports, put me through school. But at a very young age, I started to have this feeling of, the only way I can describe it is, like, I am not normal, and I don't feel normal, and everyone else is normal. How the hell am I gonna pull life off and convince everyone that I too am normal? And from a very, very early age, I always just felt like eventually people are gonna realize that I'm like faking it. You know, I'm faking this confidence, I'm faking whatever, and I'll be exposed for what I really feel that I am, which is like a scared little boy, right? And naturally, I think if you feel that way, a lot of us eventually end up turning to drugs and alcohol. And, you know, when I was 13, I was just like a normal 13-year-old kid, right? And I did what any 13-year-old would do, which is to pay a homeless guy to buy you a bottle of vodka. You know, standard 13-year-old stuff. And, you know, I drank it with my friend, and we didn't necessarily know that you had to basically, like, wait for the effects to hit. So we drank the entire bottle. And I, of course, immediately blacked out, which, again, I didn't know at the time that that would be pretty representative of how my drinking career would go for the next 15 years. But we blacked out, and we also had a great time. And, you know, I kind of remember, as cool as I want to say that, like, I woke up when I was 13 and wanted to do it again, I don't know that I did that, but I definitely wanted to try at some point. And I remember the way that I drank then is the way that I drank throughout my whole career, which is super hard, super fast, and with a pace. I don't know why, but anything that I drink quickly. I find myself like chugging water till I'm choking and being like, dude, you don't have to chug water. You can just sip it like a normal person. But you know, after 13, then I went to high school, and, you know, in San Francisco, you get exposed, if you live in a city, if you're a city kid, you kind of get exposed to things at a fairly young age. And me and my friends, like, all we wanted to do was drink and chase girls. And all of my friends also blacked out when they drank. So I did not know that that was an abnormal way to drink. I thought that that was just like, oh, this is what you do. Like, you get really drunk, and then you do really stupid things, and you all laugh about it. And then when I went to college, I went pro. Like, I really took it to another level. And I joined a fraternity, and I became the social chair of that fraternity, and then I became the vice president. And it was my sole mission to throw the most epic parties at the number one party school in the country at the time. And we had a great time. I almost drank my way out of school. But as I started getting into this age is when, like, pretty significant consequences started to pile up, right? You know, when you're in high school, there's only so much trouble you can get into. And then you start getting behind the wheel of a car and doing other things on top of alcohol. But the consequences really started to add up for me. And I mean, the worst one of all was like waking up New Year's Day in jail and having no recollection of how I got there. And I started to kind of piece together like, no, I took a cab home. So this is a dream because there's no way that I could be here because I took a cab home. And then I remember, I was on the side of the road and I was smoking a cigarette because I had crashed my mom's car. And the only thing that I remembered was the cop called my mom to say, hey, you know, do you want to pick your son up? You know, you can take him home. He doesn't have to go to jail. Mom, do you want to tell them what you told the cop? just for the recording, I believe it was take his ass to jail is what I heard through the other end of the phone. So look, I'd love to say that that was the moment where I turned the corner, but it was not. I spent basically the next 10 years trying to figure out, you know, how to drink like a gentleman, right, as we say. And I started to try to figure out what was the right combination of substances or pace or timing that would allow me to drink and not black out and not basically turn into a werewolf and go out crazy and then have to kind of put it all together, right? And so I never really understood that until I read the Big Book. And on page 31, it outlines, here are all the methods we have tried. Drinking beer only, limiting the number of drinks, never drinking alone, never drinking in the morning, drinking only at home, never having it in the house, never drinking during business hours, drinking only at parties, switching from scotch to brandy, drinking only natural wines, agreeing to resign if ever drunk on the job, taking a trip, not taking a trip, swearing it off forever, taking more physical exercise, reading inspirational books, going to health farms, sanitariums, accepting voluntary commitment. We could increase the list ad infinitum. Now, when I read that, I knew I was screwed because now I had read a direct chapter in the Big Book that word for word outlined exactly what my behavior was. And I had also learned that normal people do not do that. What a concept. They just drink. But for me, I went through this whole experience trying to figure it out. And as I kept drinking, my excuse personally was always just like, there's no way I could not drink because our whole society revolves around drinking. All of my friends drink, there's weddings, I work, we go out, I'm breathing, so I have to drink. But I always like in my head, you know, said to myself, like, I think the only way I would get sober is if like nobody could go out and every bar in the city was shut down. Then maybe I would consider it. And then literally God shut down every bar in the world and also made it so that none of my friends could go out. We couldn't see each other. And I was kind of faced with this of like, wow, like this is kind of the time now to do it. Maybe I'll give it a shot, right? So I didn't drink for the first 3 months of the pandemic. And me and my mom, we were in our pod together. We'd watched Warner House Classics. It was adorable. And I was doing really well. I felt really good. I felt really clear. And then like the bars opened back up and I got honest truth, thought I was fixed. I was like, I've grown, I've matured, I've learned a lot of how precious life is, all of these things I was reading on the news. I'm fine, right? So the bars opened back up. I got a text from my crew and they said, we're going out. And I mean, I guess you guys can guess. Do you think I blacked out? Yes or no? Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I immediately blacked out within like 3 or 4 hours. And I had also gotten into a huge fight with my best friend and I got excommunicated from my group, which like to give you an understanding of like how hard it would be to be excommunicated from a group of degenerates. It's like a group of wolves kicking out a wolf for being too much like a wolf. So it was like pretty low. And this is where, like, the insane idea, right, comes in. Our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. The insane idea won out. Next day, we would ask ourselves, in all earnestness and sincerity, how could it have happened? Specifically, earnestness and sincerity. That is how I woke up every time I blacked out. I was genuinely a different person than when I was drunk and when I was sober. And oftentimes I could not, it's not that I couldn't take ownership. It was like, because it was a different person, I had trouble relating. So people would ask me, well, why would you do this thing? And I literally would be like, I have no idea. I can't tell you. And I also agree that I hate that. Like, I was like, if we're on the same side here. Like, that guy sucks. But, you know, waking up that day in the pandemic and having blacked out again, this was my jumping off point. You know, I had a lot of issues with drinking throughout the years, cheated on partners, DUI, almost lost jobs, hurt family members, not physically, more emotionally, just being a jackass. And this, for some reason, was the straw that broke the camel's back, right? And the second thing that I read when I got through the big book that really scared me and really pegged me was when it says on page 152, someday he will be unable to imagine life either with alcohol or without it. Then he will know loneliness such as few do. He will be at the jumping off place. He will wish for the end. And that's where we all need to get to in order to decide that maybe we'll give Alcoholics Anonymous an earnest shot. And luckily for me, as I told you, it's a family business. So I called my sister and she goes, so what'd you do? And I told her and she goes, oh, that's it? And I was like, yeah. Which is always like a good feeling when you spill your guts and this horrific thing you did, and an alcoholic is like, oh, that was like a Tuesday back in the day. But she told me, go find a meeting and don't drink. So that's what I did. So I went on to Zoom and, or I went on the website. I found the first meeting I could. And I dialed in. The first thing that they said was, we've been waiting for you. And I go, you know, how did they know I was coming? Because I didn't register. I didn't put my name down. But I am a pretty great guy, so it makes sense that you guys have been waiting for me. But they also, they told me something that really stuck with me, which is, you don't have to drink again ever. And that was a powerful thing to hear to somebody who has never heard from another person that it's okay not to drink. Just to hear that and believe them. And a guy reached out to me on Zoom and he gave me his number and he said, I'm going to take you through the steps. Which again, I also like, I really didn't know anything about AA. When they prayed, I thought I maybe accidentally like selected the religious meeting. And I also didn't know that you got to pick your sponsor. So I was like, okay, cool. Which I'm happy, like I'm really happy that I did not overthink getting my first sponsor. Because if God throws you a life raft, don't ask what color it is. And so I went to that meeting and I cried through my first meeting. And I met up with my sponsor and I was literally dressed like the Unabomber. Like I didn't want to be seen out in public because of all the guilt and shame. So I had like aviators and a hoodie on. And it was also the pandemic, so I hadn't really been like interacting with people that much. So I'm surprised my sponsor wanted to meet with me again. But he asked me the question that everyone gets asked, right? Which is, do you think you're an alcoholic? And at the time I had kind of thought so, but I wasn't sure. So I Googled, how do I know if I'm an alcoholic? And there's actually like a test you can take online. I took that test and scored really high on that test. Yeah, I went like 9 for 10. Then he asked me, you know, am I willing to go to any length and work the 12 steps? And I said yes. And at that time, I only was able to commit. I was like, I'm going to stay sober for a year and work the 12 steps as a lot of people say to, you know, to get the alligators off your butt, like get back in with my crew, maybe patch things over with my mom, and that's it. You know, so I was a year and 12 steps, but I was going to work them earnestly. And that kicked off my journey. And, you know, basically in order for you to stay sober, at least for me, like a bunch of miracles have had to have happened and keep happening in order for me to stay in this program. The first miracle is the willingness to go to your first meeting, which I just told you about. The second is that you start to feel relief and have a spiritual awakening somewhere throughout the steps. And so, you know, a lot of guys like this American League Johnny always used to talk about the third step. You know, he did the third step prayer and he felt this like huge sense of relief and he felt like God come down and like hug him. And I remember working my third step and I was like so excited. I was like, dude, I need a hug from God real bad right now. And I said the third step prayer and my sponsor looked at me and he was like, so how do you feel? And I was like, I think maybe I said it wrong. Could I try doing it one more time? Because I did not feel the relief. For me, relief came at the ninth step. That's when the shame and guilt started to melt away. And I think for myself, you know, the step that I had the hardest trouble building up the courage to do was the one that gave me the most relief. The other thing too was doing the fear inventory, which was pretty illuminating. I think that's really where I realized my addiction to fear. I went through it with a sponsor and there was a section where it said, you know, scared of being single, scared of being in a relationship, scared of not getting married, scared of getting married, scared of not having kids, scared of having kids. My sponsor was like, those are all the combinations of life. So you're just perpetually scared no matter what. And that really was how it felt. You know, I was scared of everything. So I started working the steps and I started to feel relief and I started to get onto the pink cloud, right? This is the pink cloud that a lot of people talk about. And this is kind of where the next miracle, which is overcoming your first like big test in sobriety, which I think comes to people at different times, you know, but for me, 6 months in, I had made my amends. I'd cleaned up my side of the street. I was sober. I was dating a super hot girl. I had made a lot of money. And I remember thinking to myself, sobriety is awesome. Like, look at all these great things that I have. And as you guys know, we all have to learn that that's not really what's promised to you when you get sober. And flash forward to a year, coming up on my 1 year mark, the girl had left. The money I'd made, I actually ended up owing all of it back in taxes, and the stock plummeted. And I owed like an ungodly amount of money. And my mom that same week, you know, told me that they had found a growth on her thyroid. And I remember thinking to myself, sobriety sucks. Look at all these things I don't have. So I kind of made a plan. And the plan was, you know, I'm thinking about maybe relapsing or ending it permanently. Because I know alcohol doesn't work for me, but not using alcohol is not working for me. And my sponsor reached out and he was like, hey, I really want to finish the 12th step before the end of the holidays. Like, will you come over? It's like, okay, I'll go help him. And then I'll go either relapse or kill myself. I still wasn't sure. Maybe both. But we'll kind of go from there. So, I go up to work the 12th step with him and I can, you know, you can kind of tell your sponsee's just in a bad, bad mind state. And I go, hey man, like what's wrong? He's like, oh, I just got like my taxes. I owe a lot in taxes. I go, oh, you owe a lot. How much do you owe? He goes, I owe $1,100. And I go, do you want to know how much I owe? And he goes, yeah. He said, well, I owe $112,000. And in fact, I owe so much that I will pay yours because adding it on to my bill will not make any difference in terms of how quickly or how slowly I'll be able to pay off this bill. It's like 1%. It does not matter. So I'll pay yours and let's get to the book. And he goes, no, it's fine. I have the money. I can pay it. And I go, cool. Well, do you feel better? And he goes, yeah, I feel a lot better. So we start to read step 12. And this is like the either most beautiful and annoying thing about the big book and the 12 and 12 is like you always read what you need to read when you need to read it, no matter what part of the book you're in. But in the 12th step on page 122, as I'm feeling so sad of how broke and destitute I am, we read together and I get this part. With the help of AA's 12 steps, we could lose those fears no matter what our material prospects were. We could cheerfully perform humble labor without worrying about tomorrow. Money gradually became our servant and not our master. It became a means of exhausting love and service with those about us. When, with God's help, we calmly accepted our lot, then we found we could live at peace with ourselves and show others who still suffered the same fears they could get over them too. So now I was real, really upset because my plan's not going well. I'm helping somebody work the 12th step, and now I'm directly reading a passage in the book that basically says, like, yeah, dude, this is a part of the process, right? Yeah, you're gonna lose whatever. It's overcoming and then using that lesson to help another person. And so I left his house, and I was still really thinking about this. And thinking, should I go right or left? You know, left was home, right was out. And I got a call from my mom, and she said, hey, do you want to come over and watch a movie? I go, yeah, sure. What movie did you have in mind? She goes, It's a Wonderful Life. And I go, well, what's that movie about? And she says, oh, it's about a good guy who ran into financial hardship, who wants to kill himself, and then he learns that he has everything he need and doesn't need money to be happy. She goes, do you think you would want to see that movie? I'm not making this up either. And I go, I'll be over in 10 minutes. And I went over that night, we watched It's a Wonderful Life. And while I was there, she told me that she was proud of me and that she didn't worry about me anymore. And at that point, it felt very similar to like how I think about the allegory of the cave, which is like you're in Plato's allegory of the cave, you're like a prisoner and you're strapped to a board and you're looking at a wall with shadows on it. But because that's all you've ever seen, you think that that is reality. It's these shadows. And one day they let you out of the cave. And when you get out of the cave, your neck really hurts and the sun is really bright because you've never seen true sunlight before. And the allegory is like, do you want to go back in or do you want to stay outside? Like, do you want to go back to what you know, go back to the shadows and think that that's your reality? Or do you want to try giving a shot in what is the real world? And when she said, you know, I don't worry about you anymore, that was when I kind of committed to, like, I'm going to work this program, you know, at least until she goes to the garden in the sky. No. Kidding. No, that was when I kind of went from a one-year loner AA program to like, I'm just going to work this, and this is going to be my kind of new way of life. And so that has been how this program has worked. Like every time I've ever like come close, as John says, you know, been on the stared over at the abyss and kind of looked out into like, is this what I'm going to keep doing with my life? You know, the warm breeze kind of pushes you back off the ledge and keeps you into the program. And that to me is what is continues to be mind blowing about this is like, every time I maybe try to like do less or work less. People come back into my life and like the door opens again, right? And it's like, I can keep going through. And so we talk a lot about choice. Like a lot of people talk about relapses, like the relapse happened to them. And like, that's all well and good. Like, I think we actually have a lot of choice in our program. Like God can open the door, but we have to walk through it. Like we have to do the 12 steps. Like God is not going to do the 12 steps for you. And that like kind of commitment is really what continues to be like the fuel. The other thing I'll say is like, I always try to just hang out with people who have much better programs than me, so that like, I always feel like my program's the worst in my group. And maybe because it is, I don't know. Ray might think, but like the whole point is like, thanks Sean. But the whole point is like the people in the program, the fellowship is like the it's part of the triangle for a reason, right? It is what keeps us like, it is one of the one third of the things that keeps us sober. And it's one of those that like happens for you. Like people reach out, people call, you call out, you reach out to people. They're constantly reaching out to me trying to say like, let's go to this meeting. Like it, as much as I like sometimes want to put AA on the back burner, it keeps moving its way to the forefront of my life. And the beauty of that, right, is we always hear like, don't let the life AA gave you get in the way of your AA life, something like that. And that's really the truth, right? But it's really easy to let other things get in the way if you let it. Life is very complex. And so that's like what I want to talk about at the end is really kind of the fourth kind of miracle for me, which is just like recommitting to AA again and again and again. So you get into the program, you work the 12 steps, and then maybe you kind of find yourself in this like middle ground after a couple of years. Like for me, it was when I moved down to San Diego and I didn't have a sponsor because my sponsor lived in San Francisco. And I had tried to go to a couple meetings, but they were like horrible. When I got down here, like half of them like weren't even active anymore. And then one was really bad. And I was like, I just don't know if they know how to do AA down here. Like, it's not that good. I was like, okay, I'll go to one more meeting. You know, for me, it's always like, I'll go to do that in one next step. And that's all I can really commit to. But that one next step always brings on like 15 more steps, right? So it's like, okay, I'll go to one more meeting. So I went on a Friday night and I was in a church and this guy came up to me. He's like, hey man, like, you seem young. You said you like to surf. Like this might not be the meeting for you, but I do know the meeting for you. And you know, it's called Don't Be a Dick. There's a bunch of guys who surf. You're going to love it. So I decide, okay, you know, I'm going to go to that meeting. And just by going to that meeting, like the doors to AA like kicked wide open for me in San Diego. And I met Ray, who got me into a surf group, all sober guys that surf every Saturday. And then we go to a meeting. It's like, and that then got me into service and got me a new sponsor down here. Like it all snowballs from one decision to just like put your foot forward and do that next step. All those other things kind of come. And, you know, I think that's kind of the trick of the program. And that is the take it a day at a time. But the thing that I've kind of learned is like, we kind of stop drinking pretty early in this program. Like for a lot of us, it's like you day one, you are not drinking. Day two, you are not drinking. Day three, you are not drinking. And so then it's like, okay, well then what are we actually doing here, right? And American League, John, you know, he kind of came and told me, which really, really impacted me, is that like not drinking is definitely a part of this program. And having that obsession remove is definitely a part of this program. But finding inner peace is really what this program can give you. And like, if that's something you're interested in, then this program is for you. And I don't know an alcoholic who could honestly think about that and say, nah, I don't want inner peace. Like that's all we want. That is why we use, that is, if you go back to the crux, to the very beginning of why Adam started to drink, it was because I was not at peace. And temporarily, alcohol allowed me to be at peace and allowed me to be confident. And then alcohol put me into the middle of a calamity. So I had to figure out, like, where's another way that I can find peace? And when I got to these rooms and I got into this program, and another man told me, you know, we can help you with that, I was sold. And let me tell you, that's the base package that you get. The base package for free. Inner peace. The biggest thing is recovering from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And eventually, we all learn that sobriety is a gift, right? And it's not a way for us. It is really the only way. People will tell you if you relapse, you will likely end up in jail or dead. And when guys like John used to first tell me that, I was like, chill out. Like, super extreme. It was his, like, major pain moment. They're trying to, like, scare me straight. But now, 5.5 years in, like, I know that to be true. And, like, anyone who's been around here for maybe more than a year has known people who have ended up in jail or who have died. So, on one hand, like, AA is really fun, and it's really been this amazing thing for me to help me live, like, happy and joyous and free at times. And I've had, like, the most genuine laughs that I've ever had in this program and made the most genuine friendships that I've ever made in this program. It's just been this, like, beaming source of light. But on the other hand, like, it's really serious. And we've all been in meetings where somebody has shared about some really hard things and it gets quiet as a pin drop. You know, and you can hear everything. And that is the beautiful part of the program. Like, we get to experience both, and we get to experience sober, and we get to not keep, like, getting in our own way. So, that's kind of all I got. If you want to get out of your own way as well, and you're new, we got the solution for you. And yeah, I'm super grateful you guys asked me to lead. Thank you, John. And thank you.
How about Adam, guys, huh? It's not over yet. Sit the hell down. Sit down. It's not over yet. I'd like to thank the Women's Auxiliary for serving a great dinner. And how about those chicken enchiladas, huh? Yeah, all right. That was good stuff. You guys in the house, you need a sponsor, you got Adam right here. Come see him after the meeting. This guy's worked the 12 steps. That's an ex-problem drinker armed with the knowledge of about himself and about his problem that can help you solve your problem. Okay, that's what we do here. Let's close with the serenity prayer of Adam's choice.
Podium. Come on, jump on in here. Jump on in here. We got some room.
Stop showing off, Robert. You can walk by yourself.
We're playing. I got my bag. Hold on, Mary's coming.
Serenity prayer after a moment of silence for those still suffering in and out of the rooms. God.
God. God.